This is your Sound Off Extra review for NXT TakeOver Portland for February 16, 2020. I am the Solemn Monster. The first Sunday TakeOver show ever, and the first one to have, I believe, have six matches on the card. Earlier today on the Sound Off, when I ran down my predictions, clean sweep, by the way, very proud of that. There were a couple matches on this show that were tough to call. I think the Balor-Gargano match and the main event really could have gone either way. But I nailed it on all the predictions on a show that was not totally predictable going in. But I said on paper that this had the potential to be the best TakeOver special that WWE has ever produced. And with the show over now, I can sit here and tell you that if this is not the best TakeOver bell to bell that they've ever done, it's top three easily. I mean, there's been so many TakeOvers, I can't remember all of them offhand, but this may have been the best one they've ever done. This Portland crowd is Exhibit A. Why NXT needs to start taking some of their TV shows out of Full Sail and on the road. You had a hot crowd here in Portland. It was kind of like the Austin, Texas crowd that AEW had for Dynamite last week. So hat tip to them for being loud all night long. On the kickoff, Charlie Caruso was joined by Sam Roberts and Mansoor to hype up the show, and every time they showed Sam on screen, the crowd booed. And every time they showed Mansoor, the crowd cheered. And I thought Mansoor was quite good in the role. It is that time of year where they dust him off and remind us that he's still employed with the next Saudi Arabia show coming up next week. Poppy was back with her zombie band to open the show. That's how they described them when they arrived at the building. The announcers referred to them as Poppy's zombie band. And they were out at the beginning of the show to perform her songs Fill the Crown and Anything Like Me. I like Poppy. I like her sound. So anytime they bring her in is all right with me. The show opened. Holy shit, what an opening match this was. Keith Lee defending the North American Championship against Dominik Dijakovic. A fantastic opener. It was every Lee-Dijakovic match that we've seen before. You know, two athletic big men doing high spots and just killing each other to a big reaction from the crowd. But it just works. You know, we've seen it before. They'll throw a couple of moves in there, a couple of big high spots that they've not done. But for the most part, it pretty much is the same blueprint as all their other matches. But these two just have a special chemistry between them that I never get tired of seeing them work together. And right from the outset, we got the sight of 320 pounds of Keith Lee hitting a standing Hurricanrana. Dijakovic hit a corkscrew moonsault off the top rope for a near fall. Later on, he had Lee up on his shoulders on the top rope. And it was pretty obvious that he was starting to lose his grip. It was like, uh-oh. So he quickly dumped him down for an Avalanche Death Valley driver. Crowd wanted tables. Keith Lee told them to shush, and the arena fell silent for him to do the bear paw chops to the chest. Echoed through the arena. Dijakovic fought back, super kick, knocked Lee backwards down into one of the padded announce chairs. So Lee is taking a seat. He's half groggy. He's sitting in this chair in between the two announce desks. Dijakovic races back into the ring, and in what probably was the spot of the night, maybe certainly the spot of the match, if not of the night, he gets inside, and he quickly hits a springboard senton off the top rope all the way down onto Keith Lee outside. Dijakovic, I have to say this, had very little margin for error on that dive. That could have ended very badly if he was just a few inches over on either side. He would have hit the edge of the announce table and cracked his skull open. So he hit this perfectly. Back inside, Dijakovic took a spirit bomb from Keith Lee, but he popped back up, clutched it. Now, at first when he popped up, I was like, oh, come on. You know, you're going to no-sell the spirit bomb. But I will say, he clutched the back of his neck. I appreciated that. A little attention to detail there. He clutched the back of his neck like he was in pain, but he did the fighting spirit Hulk up. He went for a PK, Lee ducked, hit another spirit bomb, and Dijakovic kicked out, and Lee can't believe it. Can't believe he kicked out of the spirit bomb. So Dijakovic hits a Spanish fly off the top rope. He goes for Feast Your Eyes. Lee was too heavy to lift him up, though. His back couldn't support the weight. And Lee finished him off with, I guess, what he's calling the Big Bang Catastrophe for the win. This was insane action here. And after the match was over, Lee helped Dijakovic up to his feet. The two shook hands out of respect. This was great. This was as good of an opener, as great of an opener as you could hope for on a pay-per-view or any show. Dakota Kai against Tegan Nox in a street fight. If you haven't seen the four-part comeback series on Tegan on the WWE Performance Center YouTube channel, give it a watch. It does a great job of documenting her injuries and her comeback. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who winces every time that this woman does a dive or any kind of move where she lands on her feet, like off the ropes. You know, she tore both of her ACLs. She came back from over a year on the shelf from a torn ACL just to tear her other ACL and basically blow up her entire knee. I think she tore her ACL, her MCL, her PCL, everything. Her knee exploded. So I can't help it. Every time I watch this woman in the ring now, I worry. I worry that we're going to see something bad happen, but thankfully she was okay here in this. Well, maybe not at the finish she wasn't. So Dakota jumps Tegan during her entrance. They pull out various weapons from under the ring. Yeah, you got to live up to this street fight stipulation here. So they got trash cans and steel chairs, and Dakota tried to smash a cricket paddle across Tegan's face. I have no idea why that was out there. But she ducked. It smashed into pieces across the ring post. Dakota took a violent German suplex onto a garbage can. Later on, Dakota duct taped Tegan to the ring post, delivered some kicks. Tegan broke free and hit Dakota with a laptop. She hit her with the anonymous Raw GM. And she grabbed the Hercules chain from underneath the ring, used it as a weapon on Dakota's knee. Dakota also was out for a while, I think, with a torn ACL. What's going on down there? So she used the chair to pilmanize Dakota's leg and then delivered the shiniest wizard. And she could have gone for the pin. That's her finish. But she said no. She had other plans. And so instead, she set up a table in the ring, and she laid Dakota across the table, put her neck in a chair to pilmanize her neck, basically to kill her, climbed up top. All of a sudden, out comes Reyna Gonzalez, now going by the name Raquel Gonzalez. So they changed her first name. She is from the Mae Young Classic. She has been training at the Performance Center for quite a while. She goozles Dakota Kai, grabs her by the neck, and choke slams her off the top rope, but she did not just push her backwards. This was no normal chokeslam. She lifted her up and launched her through the air down onto the table. The table did not break. I am the table. As everybody, I'm sure, was saying the same thing, right? Everyone immediately thinks of Botchamania with these things. I mean, how can you not? That table did not break. She took a disgusting bump off that table. The look on people's faces in the crowd, like in the first five rows, it looked like they had just witnessed an assassination. They had just seen somebody get shot. So that was nasty. And Dakota crawled over and pinned Tegan, which she had to even the score. I said this on the podcast earlier today. This doesn't end tonight. You know, Tegan got a win over her on TV a few weeks ago. This was Dakota's night. Kai had to win this match to keep this feud solvent, for lack of a better word, and keep it going until WrestleMania weekend. So this was maybe the one match on the show outside of the key, well, I guess outside of the Rhea Ripley match too, that, you know, the outcome to me was very predictable here. I did not expect Tegan Nox to go over. And Gonzalez gets in the ring. She helps Dakota to her feet, raises her arm, and Dakota looks surprised by this. So we'll have to wait, I guess, to hear from Raquel on why she did what she did, but it appears that she may be with Dakota. She might be her heavy now. And I don't know, who knows what her rationale is for what she did here. I mean, if Dakota didn't hire her, if she wasn't a hired gun, then she obviously has her own personal reasons for doing what she did. Maybe Tegan Nox took her parking spot or something, you know. I mean, more than a few times I wish I could do the same thing to people that have taken my parking spot. But this was another excellent match. It was more of a wild brawl than a match, but I think it lived up to the stipulation just fine, you know, with all the violence. I mean, no blood, but a lot of violence here in this match. The finish fell a little bit flat only because of the botch. And also, people didn't know who the hell Raquel Gonzalez was. This woman runs out there, nobody knows who she is. I knew because I remember her face, but even people watching on TV, probably half the people were like, who the hell is this? And so between that and the botch, it fell a little bit flat. But you know what? If anything, that botch, you know, her bouncing off the table like that was more devastating than it would have been had she actually gone through the table. You know, it looked nasty, but it probably hurt a lot more. So they announced, all the Irish fans are going to be happy about this. They announced that for the first time, NXT TakeOver, UK TakeOver, is coming to Dublin, Ireland at the 3 Arena. On Sunday, April 26th. Finn Balor against Johnny Gargano. Another excellent match. It's not often that you find a trio of matches like this to open a show. It's a rare occurrence. Not even Wrestle Kingdom can say that they opened with three excellent matches like this. It was a Johnny Gargano match, so you knew he was going to sell. He was going to sell the dreaded knee. And he did so after a dragon screw early on by Balor. Balor went for the double stomp. Gargano rolled away. He went for the Gargano escape. Balor did escape. Gargano got it locked on again. Balor got the rope break. And so, if you remember, when Balor initially attacked Gargano many months ago on NXT, he hit the dropkick. He hit the shotgun dropkick, John Woo, whatever you want to call it, outside the ring, and he knocked Gargano backwards into the barricade. So Gargano did the exact same thing to him here. He gave him a receipt for what Balor had done to him months earlier. Balor gave Gargano a front face suplex onto one of the announce desks. Balor recovered. He ran the length of both announce desks and gave Gargano a shotgun dropkick into the barricade. You know, Finn Balor right now is just, he's on another level. He's in another stratosphere compared to the Finn Balor of old. I mean, just the intensity, the scowl on his face, you know, the stiffness in his moves. The crowd was into everything that he was doing. I think this crowd was onto something here, now that I think back to it, because towards the end of the match, this crowd was booing Johnny Gargano. They were more into Finn Balor than they were into Gargano, and they were actually booing Johnny. So maybe they had a sense of what was to come later on in the night. But Balor went up top. He hit the most devastating coup de grace I've ever seen him deliver. The height he got on this thing. He stomped the guts out of Johnny Gargano. And then delivered a brutal 1916 DDT. He planted this fucker right on his head. And pinned him clean in the middle of the ring. Finn Balor has never looked better, I think, than he does at this moment. I mean, as intense. He's on a roll. He's just firing on all cylinders. And the only question now is, where does he go from here? You have to think he's going to factor into the championship picture heading into Tampa. I'll talk more about that later. Backstage, Undisputed Era is being interviewed by Kathy Kelly. Roderick Strong was doing all the talking. Adam Cole did pipe in. He told Kathy at the end, "You can go now, Kathy." And she sheepishly walked off for the final time, because Kathy Kelly gave her notice to WWE, and tonight was her final night working for the company, and so that's her final appearance on TV, being yelled at and sent away by Adam Cole. Bebe. Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair for the NXT Women's Championship. I don't want people to get the wrong impression when I say this. This was, in my opinion, the weakest match on the show, but you have to put things in perspective. You're talking about a show where nothing ranked below, you know, I don't use star ratings usually, but to use star ratings, I don't think there was anything on this show that would rank below 3.75, maybe 4 stars. That's what this was. I put this match in that range. That's pretty damn good if that's the, quote, worst match on the entire show. So it's still a very good match. I just thought it was missing something. There were a couple of little slip-ups here, but I just thought when it was over, I just thought, I don't know. It was missing something. It didn't have, for example, what the match that Rhea had with Shayna Baszler had on NXT back in December. You know, I've seen both women have better matches. And it had a lot of competition tonight. Tonight was a rough night. If you were trying to one-up everybody else and have the best match on the show, especially after the show opened with that Keith Lee match, good luck. Good luck. So they had a back-and-forth match. Of course, we had the spot with Belair using her hair braid at one point to whip Rhea Ripley. Always gets a reaction, both from the person she's whipping and from the crowd. And she gorilla press slammed Rhea. She did a handspring into a moonsault. Rhea got the knees up. And Rhea then blocked a KOD attempt by Bianca. Belair hit a terrifying high back body drop. She sent Rhea Ripley out of the ring into orbit. This was horrifying to watch, because all I'm thinking as I'm watching Rhea just soar through the air and land on the floor is she's going to break her ankle. She's going to break her ankle. She's going to rupture her Achilles. Something like that. Just the way she landed. I thought, there goes WrestleMania. There goes her WrestleMania match. There goes her WrestleMania moment. I mean, look, you have people out right now. Ember Moon, Xavier Woods, Edge many years ago. These people, they're running the ropes. They do a simple leapfrog and they rupture their Achilles. This woman took this high back body drop to the floor. Somehow she didn't get hurt. I have no idea how that didn't happen. Thankfully, she did not get hurt. Ripley, when Bianca does a flip of her own, she does a running dive out over the top rope. She kind of clipped the top rope, and that was a little scary too. It would have been a lot scarier if Rhea wasn't there to catch her. And Rhea sent Bianca into the steps. They were up on the turnbuckles, going back and forth, when Rhea was able to gain control, and she got her in position for the riptide. So she basically got her off the ropes, right into the riptide finish, and scored the pin. It felt like the crowd really wasn't ready for it, like they weren't expecting that to be the finish. But hey, she hit her finish. I'd like to see more people, when they hit their finish the first time, get the pin. I can't complain about that. Charlotte Flair. We knew Charlotte Flair was going to be there. She sneak attacked Rhea from behind, hit her with natural selection. Charlotte grabbed the microphone and said, "You want an answer? I'll see you at WrestleMania." And then she posed with the NXT Women's Championship. So, it is now official. Charlotte Flair will challenge Rhea Ripley in Tampa for the NXT Women's title. Charlotte, when she left the ring, Bianca was still out there. She sent Bianca into the ring steps for good measure. And I could see that as a TV match, either on, you know, SmackDown or... What brand is Charlotte? I don't even know what brand Charlotte is on these days. Holy shit, she's on Raw, right? Yeah. Either on Raw or on NXT. I could see that now being a match at some point in these next few weeks. Charlotte Flair against Bianca Belair one-on-one. But I think as far as WrestleMania is concerned, they have to keep this as a singles match. I don't want to see it expanded into a triple threat. You know, I like Bianca. And if they want to find some other role for her at WrestleMania, then go ahead. But this should be kept one-on-one. Charlotte is the Royal Rumble winner. She is challenging for the championship. You don't need to throw anybody else in this match. It should be Charlotte one-on-one against Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. We have Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly against the Broserweights, Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle, the winners of the 2020 Dusty Classic. This was the match of the night right here, in my opinion. I like this more than I like the main event. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this. One of the cool things about this show, I think, and I want to hear from you in the comments section, because I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of varied opinion about this. But one of the cool things about a show like this, when you have so many great matches, and I was already seeing some of this in my replies on my timeline on Twitter, you're going to have a lot of people who think that the opener between Keith Lee and Dijakovic was the match of the night. I saw people saying that Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox was the match of the night. I saw a lot more people saying they thought the main event was the match of the night. Every single match on this show, including the women's title match, from what little I saw before I started recording here, were getting votes for match of the night. My match of the night, I think the best match was the tag team championship match. The Broserweights made it to Portland. They showed up in their Brosermobile with the Dusty Cup. Riddle and Dunn were wearing shirts that said, "How much fish could Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish?" Just like Riddle was wearing on Wednesday on NXT. They're trying to get this thing over. They even put the words on the screen so the crowd could chant along with Riddle. Some people tried. It kind of died a death. it's not exactly a chantable thing. But whatever, at least they're trying. So skipping ahead here, there was a spot in the match where Kyle O'Reilly had a sharpshooter locked in on Pete Dunne. They called it the Scorpion Deathlock. I actually thought that was kind of funny. Because it's WWE, right? They always call it the sharpshooter. But Mauro and Nigel both called it the Scorpion Deathlock. And technically, Sting was using the move before Bret Hart was. So he got it first. So he got it, or at least I think he did. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. I don't remember seeing Bret Hart using that move until about 91. You know, maybe, I don't remember in his book if he talks about when, was it Conan who taught him the move or something? It's possible that he was taught the move in the late 80s and was using it, but I don't remember Bret using it before 91. Sting was using it in 88, or maybe even earlier than that. So anyway, they called it the Scorpion Deathlock. Bobby Fish had a guillotine locked in, into a sleeper on Matt Riddle. Riddle was able to break both holds, including the sleeper that he was trapped in. He fell backwards onto Bobby Fish. Fish escaped a doomsday device attempt. He sent Pete Dunne into Matt Riddle, knocked him off the apron. Then, a couple moments later, Riddle comes in, tries to make a save. He inadvertently spears Pete Dunne. So now I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, they're just going to go right to the split. We're going to get Pete Dunne against Matt Riddle, WrestleMania weekend. I mean, I'm here for it. It's inevitable whenever the match is going to happen. It's not going to happen now in Tampa, I don't think. But they got me for a moment there doubting myself, even though I had them picked to win. And I thought they were going to have Undisputed Era retain and go ahead and split up the Broserweights. Thankfully, that didn't happen. So after all this, they get back on the same page. And they hit stereo jumping knee strikes. The go-to-sleep enziguri combo connects. And the Broserweights are the new NXT Tag Team Champions. What a match. This was great. Again, I'm not going through all the little... every move in the match. You got to go track the match down and watch it for yourself. You know, all the little moves and all the little, you know, the joint manipulation stuff that Dunne was doing and the hot tags and the back and forth. I just thought this was great. These two teams obviously are fantastic. We know that. But I've really been enjoying the banter and the interplay between Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle. I just thought it was some makeshift team thrown together for the tournament. And they've gelled, you know, because they're so opposite in their personalities that it just works. You know, I enjoyed some of the skits that they had on TV this past week where they were trying to transport the cup to Portland. They had to get the cup on Triple H's private plane. They're just so opposite one another. It's an odd couple. It's an odd couple pairing and it just works. So hopefully they'll stay together for a little while longer. And just like that, Undisputed Era at this point in the show is down to one championship left in their stable. Roddy already lost the North American title a few weeks ago. And now Undisputed Era loses the tag team titles. Would the same thing happen in the main event? With their one lone championship remaining? That was the question. And that brings us to the main event. Adam Cole defending the NXT title against Tommaso Ciampa. I thought that this was a very good match, maybe even an excellent match. It was an excellent match. But what killed it for me, and the reason that it's not my match of the night, what killed it for me was the no-selling of the neck with Tommaso Ciampa. It got to a point, like I could tolerate it up to a point. But in this match, it just got to be too much for me. You know, we all have our breaking point. I know a lot of people that really hated that match in New York last year, WrestleMania weekend, between Cole and Gargano, when Ciampa went down with the neck injury at first, and Cole took his place, and I thought he and Johnny went on to have the greatest championship match, maybe the greatest match, period, in NXT history. And not everybody agrees with me on that. Some people would say the same thing about that match that I'm kind of saying about this match. The kickouts, the no-selling, it just got to be too much. Every Adam Cole match is like this, or every Johnny Gargano match is like this. It's too much. See, that match, it didn't bother me. There were some other Cole matches last year, including some of the rematches, where it did bother me. In New York, it didn't bother me last year. But it just got to be too much here with the champ and the next stuff, you know? There was a fan in the crowd that wanted a high five from Ciampa. Ciampa didn't give it to him, but he did plant a wet one on this guy's bald head. This guy looks so happy. He's never going to wash his head again. Hopefully he doesn't have any dandruff or psoriasis or anything like that. The spot of the match, and I don't necessarily mean this in a good way, although I guess it worked into the story. You know, I don't have any injury updates. I don't know who may be hurt coming out of the show yet. We'll find out, you know, after I'm done recording here. I would hope this was all selling and Champ is okay and he didn't do something stupid and hurt himself. But he took an unnecessarily stupid, dangerous bump that was so insanely dumb in this match. He took a wheelbarrow suplex. They were outside the ring. And Cole gave him a wheelbarrow suplex onto the announce desk. And the way that he hit, the spot where he landed, right on the base of his neck, just an incredibly stupid bump. There was almost like a hush that came over the crowd for the next couple of minutes after this spot. So you can say, well, it worked. That's what they were going for. They wanted to shock you. They wanted to just make you think that this guy's got a broken neck and how could he continue? And then they played on your emotions. And for the rest of the match, they were targeting the neck and targeting the neck. You know, just like with Gargano earlier, targeting the knee. You know, the body part here was the neck. But this guy, you know, he came back from surgery to repair his broken neck. And I just watched that and I just shook my head. I just said, why? Why would you even take the risk? I mean, I know it's a risk just being in the ring and just taking bumps in general, but why would you take a stupid risk like that? So then Cole hit a backstabber to the back of Ciampa's head. There was a Panama Sunrise attempt by Cole. Ciampa caught him with a dropkick to the face on his way down. Cole hit an Ushiguroshi for a near fall, again working over the neck. Ciampa came back, avalanche air raid off the middle rope for a near fall. Back and forth we go. So outside the ring, Ciampa, he escapes a powerbomb, hits one of his own onto the announce desk. The table does not break. These tables did not give a shit tonight. These tables were uncooperative. These tables would not sell. They had full creative control tonight. And they said, uh-uh, we're not selling this shit. Thankfully, on the second attempt, he did manage to put Cole through the table. And Cole hit a pile driver. He hit a brain buster for a near fall. He hit the last shot to the back of Ciampa's head. Ciampa, though, wisely rolls out onto the apron. And Ciampa gives Cole an air raid crash on the hardest part of the ring. Cole blocks the fairy tale ending on the floor, and he hits a Panama Sunrise off the announce desk down onto the floor. He spiked Tommaso Ciampa head first, head and neck first, down onto the floor. And I think this is where they lost me. I think this is where they lost me. After a destroyer on the floor to the man selling his surgically repaired neck, Cole rolls him inside and Ciampa immediately stands up and DDTs him. Doesn't even give Cole a chance to get back in. He gets right back up and gives him a DDT. And then he hits the fairy tale ending for a near fall. Cole gets him in the crossface. Ciampa counters into one of his own. Here comes Roddy. Roderick Strong shows up. He's distracting the referee. Fish and O'Reilly, they lay out Ciampa on the floor with the high-low. They put him back inside. Cole's got the match won. Ciampa kicks out again. Ciampa sends Cole outside. He wipes out his boys. We got a ref bump. Ref goes flying out to the floor. Ciampa finally hits the fairy tale ending, but there's no referee. And who should appear but his former tag team partner, his best friend turned bitter enemy turned, I guess, friend again, Johnny Gargano. After his loss earlier in the night to Finn Balor, I guess it sent him off the deep end. Johnny Gargano is at ringside, and as Tommaso Ciampa is reaching over to grab the NXT championship that's laying in the ring, Gargano, he slides in and grabs the title, and he snatches it away from him. And he's hugging the title, he's staring at the title, and Ciampa's like, what the hell are you doing? And Ciampa basically feeds himself to Gargano. He sticks his head out between the ropes, and Gargano wallops him with the championship and turns heel. Ciampa is out, Cole covers, and he retains the title. Johnny Gargano simply could not stand the sight or at least I think this is where they're going with this. He could not stand the sight of Tommaso Ciampa winning back the NXT championship before he did. And now we get to see Gargano and Ciampa one-on-one WrestleMania weekend in Tampa after we were denied the match last year over WrestleMania weekend. We're getting it now, but this time the roles are reversed. And it's kind of weird to me because Ciampa's over right now as a babyface. There's no doubt about it. But Johnny Gargano is just the best babyface. And Tommaso Ciampa, before he got hurt and had to forfeit the title, was arguably, if not the best, one of the best heels in the business. Those seem like the proper roles for the two of them, and now the roles are reversed, and it just seems like they're miscast. But I think it could work. And I think it puts a unique spin on what feels like a feud that's already been done to death. I could see where a lot of people might not really be into this because here we go again. It's Ciampa and Gargano. We've already seen it. But it's a different spin on it because this time it's going to be Gargano as the heel and Ciampa as the babyface. So at least it is different in that way. They're not just kind of retreading the whole thing in the same roles over again. It's the match that should have happened a year ago, and now we're getting it now. But again, the roles are reversed. So that puts a little bit of a different spin on it. Now, of course, the question is what happens with the NXT Championship? I would say that leaves the door open for Cole to defend against Velveteen Dream. But then where does Finn Balor fit into the picture? So now I'm thinking, okay, well, the only thing that really makes sense for Tampa is a three-way. You know, otherwise, what the hell does Balor do? So I think we're looking probably at Cole, Dream, and Balor WrestleMania weekend. And we already know we're probably going to get Ciampa and Gargano. So those are two huge matches right there. Plus whoever Keith Lee is going to defend his North American title against. I would not expect there to be an NXT Women's Championship match on that TakeOver show since there'll be one the next day or 2 days later. I don't know how many days there are this time between TakeOver and Mania. I would assume TakeOver's the night before as always. So I don't think Rhea Ripley is going to wrestle on back-to-back nights. That just feels like you're tempting fate by doing that. So already the pieces are coming together for Mania weekend. I'm sure it'll be another great show. But top to bottom, this may have been the best TakeOver show that they've ever done. In the 6 years that they have been doing these TakeOver shows, if this wasn't the best, it was top three. Easily. Not a single bad match on the entire show. You had a new face introduced, even though a lot of people didn't know who she was. They introduced a new face. They made a WrestleMania match official. And they gave us a storyline twist at the end. So, a total thumbs up show. Let's check the Twitter poll results. I mean, this can't be anything but a thumbs up show. But let's see what the percentage is. And as I am recording this, and you can still vote, by the way, this poll is going to be open for another 3 days. So you go to @Solomonster on Twitter, you'll see the tweet, and you can cast your vote on tonight's show, thumbs up, thumbs down. Right now, the tally is 90% thumbs up, 10% thumbs down, with over 1,800 votes in. That's your NXT Portland TakeOver review. We'll see what the fallout is this coming Wednesday. If you missed episode 639... of the Sound Off. It went up earlier today, 2.5 hours worth. We covered a lot of ground, including some rumored WrestleMania matches for John Cena, a very underwhelming opponent tapped for John Cena at WrestleMania. The Undertaker seemingly will have an opponent this year that he's never been in the ring with before. I talked about that. The Hall of Fame announcement, the Hall of Fame rumors of the new inductees going in this year. Talking about Nyla Rose, which has been a very polarizing topic this past week, put some people in their place with that diatribe. And a whole bunch of other stuff. RSPW Rewind, all that good stuff. Some of it's going to be hitting the YouTube channel this week, but not all of it. So go download and listen to the full episode. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Podbean, iHeartRadio, all the usual platforms. And you'll see a lot of content popping up here on the channel throughout the week as well. I'm out of here. This has been your TakeOver review. I will see you for episode 640 of the Solomonster Sounds Off next Sunday. Until then, take care, everybody.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Hello.
Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I would.
Okay, I thought so. See, I thought so. Okay.
The Salamonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Salamonster on Twitter at Salamonster.
Salamonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Salamonster Sounds Off.